Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party Network. I'm your host for today, Lee Hutchison, and I'm joined by a special guest, photojournalist Travis Wesley. How are you, Travis?
I'm good. How are you doing, Lee?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I'm really excited to chat with you today. We've been kind of emailing back and forth for a few weeks. And before we kind of dive into your career as a photojournalist, I want to go back to kind of the 1990s and how I kind of found out about you. You had a very unique sort of upbringing on the set of Seinfeld, one of the greatest comedy shows of all time. And you had an article in the Huffington Post about it. And I thought, I need to touch base with this guy. It sounds like he had the kind of upbringing any sort of fan would love. So kind of, how did that all come around? Your mum was involved on the set, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. She was. Yeah, when you think about it, it's kind of crazy for a kid that age to be hanging out on a set of that level. She's worked on so many different shows and movies over the years, and I never really went to anything that I could remember. But when I was like maybe 10 or 11, I would start to go to the set after school. My mom worked as a boom operator on the show, so she was always up above in the green beds above the sets. And when the sound people are sort of kind of in their own little world and their like little soundproof area, so it was kind of an easy place for me to go hang out after school. So I'd go there and hang out in the booth with a mixer or up in the green beds with my mom, and I'd have like headphones on, just kind of listening in on, you know, whatever's going on the set. So it was just kind of this casual thing. I would just come and visit my mom at work, like any other kid would go see their mom at work. But this just happened to be like a show that had so much cool stuff going on at the time. I didn't realize, you know, the level of this show as far as ratings and popularity, because you know, you kid that age, you don't really watch these kind of shows, and the comedy doesn't really sink in. You know, a lot of the jokes are more adult humor, but just being around all of these, it's basically like a movie set, because you have, you know, the first team comes in, second team comes in, you know, makeup, hair, and you really get to see this kind of like movie magic kind of stuff unfold right in front of you. And I'd always watch movies when I was a kid. Just kind of grew up in a movie household. Everyone was just watching like classic films, comedy, a little bit of everything. So I would go in to the set, and it just became this kind of this normal thing, and there's so many little areas that you could kind of wander around, because when you're 10 or 11 and everyone knows you and they know your mom on the set, you can kind of just, I don't know, freely roam about. And you know, and as an adult you couldn't really do that, but kids can kind of get away with hanging out in craft service. Just, I remember this one thing that just kind of blew my mind. It's the silliest thing. There was this giant machine that I'd never seen before. It was one of those things that just made every kind of coffee and hot chocolate, and I was like, they have everything here that you could possibly want to eat, and they have all the best like camera equipment, the best sound. So I got to kind of tinker with a little bit of everything over the years, and it was a really unique experience.
Yeah, it sounds incredible. You always think of like a kid on set, and you think you could imagine some like directors of photography or staff members like, why is this kid here, and something like that. It sounds like your experience was almost the polar opposite to what.
Yeah, it was the total opposite. Yeah, you'd think, you know, it'd be like this kind of like a little rascal, you want to, you know, get out of there or something. But just because I'd been becoming so familiar with a lot of the crew, because it's a very, it was a very like friendly environment. I've been on some other sets that weren't as like cohesive as that, but everyone seemed to be like a real kind of family oriented. And once I got introduced to all the different, like, camera guys, sound guys, you know, they'd recognize me and be like, hey, what's going on? You know, in between takes, it's you're kind of just sitting around waiting. And you know, this is before, you know, iPhones or really any kind of like handheld games. I think maybe I had a Game Boy at the time, but in between takes, people were just kind of, you know, chatting, hanging about. So that's like a perfect time for me to just come over and like ask one of the camera guys, like, hey, what does this do? And then they'd be like, oh yeah, come check this out. Because they just want to like show somebody all like the neat stuff about the gear. And of course, I'm, you know, I'm kind of like starstruck by every little, you know, detail of the place, because it's literally a movie set. I mean, you have the same setup, you know, with lighting, and the cameras are these just massive Panavision film cameras, which is something like, you know, compared to my size, when you sit on the camera, there's a picture of me, I think I put on, I think it was the Huffington Post article, yeah. And I'm sitting on the Panavision camera in the New York Street backlot. And that was just one of the days I went to visit, and they were on location, which was even more fun because it's like, or now everything is outside, and it looks like a real, it looks like a real street. Like it's fully constructed, like 360 degrees, and just kind of watching that stuff unfold. Like it started to kind of sink in my mind later on, like how amazing it is to like just watch something live and then still like appreciate it and still laugh later, you know, seeing it on TV. So it's kind of a cool thing.
It sounded like you went from school to school in a way that you've got these amazing craftsmen and people working on set that are kind of showing you some of the ropes and some of the trade, you know, kind of like almost sort of a slight apprentice role you've almost got on the show.
Yeah, it sort of felt like that, especially with camera and sound, because my mom would always just have me either wait in the sound booth and I could listen to it there, either in the booth or on headphones. And then every now and then, I wasn't supposed to, but I'd go up in the green beds, and that's where you can look down below on the set. And I'd put the same headphones on that the other boom operators would listen to, and I could hear like all the little kind of read-write jokes or like the chatter between takes, and then, you know, the actual takes themselves, where you just have to be, you know, super quiet. And my favorite part was the camera stuff, because I'd always thought, like, you know, you can see sound in different places, but those Panavision cameras, I don't know, there's something kind of like magical about it, because it's the same stuff that, you know, movies are made from. And, you know, when you're a kid, you get to play with like smaller cameras or, you know, point and shoot or just kind of, you know, consumer level stuff. So when you sit on like, I remember sitting on that Panavision camera for the first time, and it's got this like, you know, awesome viewfinder eyepiece, and it's got these cool like mechanical like winder knobs to kind of adjust the axis of the camera. And it was a super like well-made machine, and it had like so many little high-end pieces of it. All the little details just like fascinated me. And as I sat on the camera, I remember Big Ed, one of the camera guys, would you'd kind of show me how to move the camera around and how to frame it. So I remember I was sitting on his camera. I'm pretty sure it was the set of Jerry's apartment, because that's where they normally were. And I remember just kind of panning and tilting and moving it around and kind of getting the hang of this like movement. And he was joking around like, oh, he's going to take my job one of these days. And I'm just like, you know, this 11-year-old kid messing around with the camera. And then Alec, who was his focus puller, he would come by and he would be like, you know, doing the focus for me. So they would kind of like make it fun. And I really enjoyed that, because they got to show me all of these things that no kid would normally get to see. And then they take the giant film magazine out, you know, bring it to the dark room, and this guy would, you know, transfer it and take it apart. I didn't really know half of what it was at the time, but I thought, this is like so cool. You get to see like all the little processes. And then a couple months later, oh, there it is. Like that's the final show right there. And I got to see like how that happened beforehand, and nobody else did. I love that.
Was there many other kids that were kind of on the set, or were you sort of the sole one getting all this kind of sort of special treatment from the crew, as it were?
No, I think there were a few others. I don't think I went as often as some other kids went. I remember Billy Ford, his son, would come every now and then. Billy was the, I think he was one of the lighting guys. And, no, he was the best boy. And I think I met up with his son once or twice. I can't remember anybody else. I was kind of just in like my own world half the time, it seemed like, yeah.
So obviously you kind of touched upon like sort of your amazing experiences working with the crew. In the article that you wrote about your kind of experience on Seinfeld, it sounded like you got to like have a lot of interaction with like the cast itself. How did you kind of go from the young boy up in sort of this green room area to being in, for example, one of Jerry Seinfeld's cars? Like, I'm looking forward to seeing you appearing on Jerry Seinfeld with comedians in cars.
I know, right? It's crazy. I can't exactly remember like how it first happened, but I remember between takes or when they would move from one set to the other, like if they were done with Jerry's apartment and they went to Monk's Cafe, Jerry's apartment wouldn't be lit, so it's just kind of this empty dark room and people aren't normally in there, and sometimes one of like the script girls or somebody would go and like sit on the couch and people were just kind of either reviewing the script or something while another scene was being shot. So I remember sitting there either with like my babysitter at the time or my mom, or even when my sister would go, and we'd be sitting on the couch, and it became like this slowly evolving thing of like I'm sitting in the set that they're not using to like, oh, now they're moving from one stage to the other or they're going on location, and then this is kind of like mingling that goes on. Everyone's just kind of chatting, and I remember just like being introduced to a couple of the cast, and then slowly it would be like these little kind of, I don't know, jokey things in between takes. Like I remember, I think my mom told me that Jason Alexander was a magician, or he worked at the Magic Castle or something like that, and somebody kind of brought us together in between one of the scenes, and he asked me if I had two pennies or two coins, and he's like, I want to show you a magic trick. So he comes up to this like table, and he wants to show me this thing where he has like two pennies, and he kind of slams them on the table and hides them again. And it was just like this really silly little magic trick, but he was such a like a performer, even when he's just kind of doing a jokey thing with a kid. It was such a cool thing to see. And that was just like one of the little bits that I remember having like a little brief interaction with him, and it just being such a natural thing. It wasn't like they were like trying to show off. They were just like always having a good time. I remember, I don't know how this happened, but I remember like sitting on the floor somewhere in one of the stages, in one of the sets, and then Michael Richards comes over, and he starts like doing like yoga or like stretching on the floor or something. He's sitting down, like just kind of reaching like this, and then I started doing it also. Like, wasn't sure if he was like trying to mess with me, and he's like, yeah, like where'd you learn how to do that stretch? Like, you do yoga? And I was like, oh, Mike, I'm watching you. Like, what are you talking about? He was just like trying to mess with me, and he was like the most like silly person. Like, you know when you just see somebody and you just like instantly want to start laughing, like this guy has just got something that is just going to make you burst at any second.
And I suppose he was always like that on the show as well, just his presence coming through a door always just,
yeah, his physical presence would just like make you laugh. And even when he's just kind of like sitting there like kind of bobbing his head, you're like, what is this guy doing? Like, is he just buzzing on coffee? I don't know. I've never seen anybody like that. It was just so physically funny. And it was just twice as funny to see it in person, because I remember sitting there like on the floor of the stage when they're doing stuff in Jerry's apartment, and when he busts through the door, you know, every time, like I'm watching it from like 15, 20 feet away, like it's a small little Broadway show in a sense, like a Broadway play. And every time he, you know, busts through the door and they have to like do it again, it was just like funny every single time. And I love seeing that. It was so cool. The other thing that was pretty cool, I don't remember exactly like my first like interaction with Jerry. I remember there's a picture of my sister and I on the couch, and I think it's on the Huffington Post article, but Jerry's got his arm around us, and we just had like this cheesy smiles. I remember that's like one of the first pictures we took with him. And then when we were on location one day, I think it was like on one of the New York Street sets or somewhere on the lot, and like somebody had a Nerf ball and they were throwing it around, and then Jerry started throwing the Nerf ball to me, and then I'm just like, all right, I guess I'm playing catch with Jerry Seinfeld now. And I was just like tossing it back and forth, and then like another day they had like a basketball hoop, and then we were just like shooting hoops. And it wasn't like a regular thing. It was just like every couple weeks or so, or every few months, and then like randomly just like stuff like this would happen. Or I'd go visit Vicky, my godmother, who was the accountant on the show, and you know, go to the offices, or it was just one of those things. I still had that free roam where I could kind of just go wherever, and because I had that and this kind of friendly environment, these little weird experiences would just come up and just be out of the blue, and that's how the slicer came up. Yeah. That whole thing was just was a totally out of the blue thing because I just happened to be there at the right day.
I was kind of touching on the slicer, like, I mean, I could explain it, but it sounds probably better coming from yourself. Do you want to explain, firstly, the plot of the slicer and sort of how you became involved in it and your role in this kind of, I'm not saying this to blow smoke up you, but it's definitely one of my all-time favourite episodes of Seinfeld. So I throw it out to you to explain to our listeners what it is.
Okay, so it is one of the more... Yeah, nutty. I mean, they're all nutty, but this one's really far out there how they get all four storylines to connect at the end. So I remember it begins with George is getting a new job. He's just always getting fired. So he's getting a new job at this place called Kruger Industries. And when he sees this picture on this new boss's desk where he's being interviewed, he sees a picture and he does this double take, and then he goes back to Jerry's apartment. He tells him that he's got this picture on the boss's desk is of his new boss and his family, and George is in the background of this picture where he photobombed them at the beach like 10 years before, or even longer, because in the photo he's got hair, and of course now George is bald. So it's I don't even know how they came up with this episode, but... So somehow 10 years earlier, he's on the beach, and it was what he's describing as the boombox incident. All his stuff is washed out to the ocean, and he thinks that these... his stuff is gone, and he thinks that these kids have thrown all his stuff in the ocean. So he throws their boombox in the ocean. Then he realizes that it was the tide all along. So he gives the guy a fake address, and he leaves, but he has this photo... some kind of moment where he photobombs them, and that's like still lingering on his boss's desk. So his whole mission now is to get himself photoshopped, airbrushed out of this picture, so his boss doesn't recognize that he's this sleazy guy. And somehow I forget how the slicer comes in. I haven't seen it in a couple.
Well, he buys a slicer. I think he gets fed up with buying sandwiches that are like terribly, the meat's cut. So Kramer buys this slicer, and then he uses Elaine's neighbor has left a cat, so they're slicing some...
Yeah, yeah, he's trying to like slice the meat so thin so that he can feed the cat that is keeping Elaine awake by crying all night. Yeah, like the whole thing connected is just, it's insane, yeah. And then Elaine wants to use the slicer to cut down her high heels. So this is like battle between Elaine wanting to use the slicer to cut her shoes, and then... Kramer wanted to use it to make, like, what does he say? He wants to make the slices so thin you can't even see them. And then Jerry says, well, then how do you know it cut?
It's like, I guess I just assumed.
I just assumed, yeah.
And then obviously with the slicer, like, as George steals the photo to try and, like, Photoshop himself out, he accidentally ends up having Kruger is removed from it. So he has
they Photoshop out the wrong, because they're both bald. Well, no, they weren't bald at the time, but they Photoshop out Kruger instead. And then he has to go back and get himself Photoshopped out, but then they do that, and then they draw Kruger in, and it just becomes this like total mess.
Yeah, it's the classic kind of Seinfeld. Everything just builds upon everything before coming together in some madness. So people will be wondering, what was your kind of role in this kind of classic episode, and that's kind of giving you notoriety, as it were?
Yeah. I remember being on the set one day, and I think it was the director, Andy Ackerman. They were talking about the scene that they needed to shoot, which was the photo and the boombox scene. And I remember I was just hanging out somewhere like by the like the video village or where the script girl was, and I think I remember Andy saying something like, "Well, we need a kid for this, and we need two kids to be like Kruger's kids. So, like Travis, here, why don't we use Travis?" And then I think my mom came over to me, and she was like, "Yeah, so they want to do this this photo," and I couldn't really believe it at the time. I was like, "They want me to be in the show? Like, I'm just hanging out here. Like, what's going on?" And because I'm already like kind of amazed every time I get to go to the set. I'm already just still amazed I get to watch everything. So now they wanted me to be in the episode. I was like, okay, that sounds cool. And then I came back the next day, and they had it all set up, this like beach backdrop with like fake sand, and they told me just wear like swim shorts and like, you know, whatever shoes you want, and you know, show up, and then there's this Kruger, you know, with his shirt off, and then Billy Ford's son was there. He was the other kid in the shot. I don't remember the mom's name, but it was like just such a weird thing. Like, now I'm just gonna stand here with my like fake family, and because I never like been part of, I never done any acting, I never done anything, you know, in front of the camera, but now it was like this, suddenly this is happening. And then Jason Alexander comes in, you know, he's got this like scowl on his face because he's, you know, he's playing that scene, and he's got you know, he's got hair on his head. So I remember like them arranging this, and then there's a photographer there, and they have us just kind of like line up, and you know, this is your new family now or whatever. I mean, they're trying to like get us in the moment, and I'm trying not to laugh because I know that Jason's right behind me, you know, like scowling, and they take a couple shots, and then I remember in between a couple of those takes, my mom would take a few shots of me just kind of like cheesing to the camera, and those are the couple I put on either the Reddit AMA I did or the Huffington Post article, and I just love like those off moments where Jason's just like scowling at the camera. It's I don't know, it's hilarious. And then once they did the photos, they had to actually shoot the scene where George is freaking out about his stuff, and he's got like, he's stealing our boombox. So I remember that they're setting up a camera right behind us, and then we're looking at this beach backdrop, and you know, Jason's there, and he's kind of like getting ready for the scene, and you know, he's supposed to be really angry, but you can see in the scene, like, the two of us are kind of moving because we're just laughing so much. Because you know, he's got this, like, crazy comedic anger that you can't help but laugh at. And he's, you know, he's right there, like, only, you know, 2 feet in front of our faces. And I think he just improv'd the lines because they didn't use the sound from that one scene, because it's like a flashback when he's telling it. And he goes off camera. He grabs a boombox. He's like, "You kids, do you know what the hell you did?" And he just like runs off into the background. He did it like, I feel like it was like 5 or 6 times. And every time, I'm just like trying to hold still, not like burst out laughing. I don't know. Just to see that guy do that right in front of my face was pretty epic. And then I think we just did the photo. We did that, and then I think they might have like reshot it once or something. And then I was only there for a couple hours, and then they even, I remember getting paid like $200 for the day or something, or like $160. And at the time I thought like, wow, that is a lot of money for, you know, like an 11 or 12 year old. Yeah, like, you know, should I get a couple Nintendo systems or something? Like, you know, a couple Game Boys. It was just like just such a random chance of like time and place, and then the next, it was like a couple days later, and then Jason Alexander is doing this right in front of me, and it's still surreal to me to like realize like how that went down.
Yeah. And what was like the reaction to like your school friends and pals when like there you are sort of on TV and you know, in this sort of role? Were they quite like all jealous, or were they like dismissive, or what was their response?
A couple of my friends knew that I'd been to the set a few times, but a lot of people were like, yeah, I don't know about that. And I just told them, like, all right, well, it'll be on blah, 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 you know, Thursday night, so, like, you'll see it there. And then, yeah, when they saw it, they were like, oh, yeah, this guy is, like, totally for real. Because I didn't really have anything to show at the time, because, you know, they shot it on film. I didn't have, you know, you didn't have anything to, like, show right away. I don't think we had the Polaroid camera that day, because we did have some Polaroids from when I went in the car ride with Jerry. But I didn't really have anything to show, like, right off the bat, you know, like, as proof. So I was like, all right, just, like, wait for it to show on TV, and then you'll know. And then when it came to the whole Boxster thing, I think I had a couple Polaroids to show some friends. So there was, like, here, this is proof.
You know. Like, it's quite interesting as well. The episode seems to have stood out in the way that I think it's almost considered the original photobomb, with this picture with George kicking about in it, and it seems to be used as a meme for this. It's used as a sort of a historical marker. Like, what does it feel almost to be part of, like, sort of internet history in that kind of respect? It's like, you know, I don't think, you know, memes just seem to pop out of nowhere, yeah. And this one seems to be the originator.
Yeah, it's funny to say that, because I never really thought of it that way, but I remember I was traveling in like Vietnam or Thailand somewhere, and I was staying in a hostel, and I remember talking to this this Canadian guy, and I think I mentioned Seinfeld, and he was like a major fan, and I was like, oh, well, you know that episode of, you know, blah, 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 like I was in that, and he's like started freaking out, and there was another like group of Canadians in another room, and there's all these like Seinfeld fans that like knew this episode. I was like, holy crap, this is crazy. And so I like pulled out my phone and got a couple like screenshots that I had saved, and I pulled up that little clip of the episode on YouTube, and they're like, oh yeah, you're that kid, like you're the one in like the photo bomb. And I never like really thought of it that way until I had like all these like random Canadian people that I met were like so amazed by it, and they like wanted to take a picture with me. It was just like a crazy thing I never realized until somebody else had said it. And then I ran into somebody else a couple years later. I think it was like a cab driver. And we were talking about New York, and then Seinfeld came up. And I was like, yeah, you know, you should check out the Slice, or I'm in that. He's like, dude, I've seen an episode. You're the kid on the right. He's like, I'm gonna go home and tell my wife right now, we're gonna watch that. And I was like, dude, this is crazy. Like, I guess the photo bomb is like the original photo bomb, because the whole idea is a comedic thing, and the way that Jason does it, and you know, the whole story behind photoshopping himself out of being photobombed is just kind of a crazy kind of coincidence. And it didn't really click with me until some other people had kind of shown me that, and it's kind of amazing, because photography has become like such a big part of my life, and I don't know if that's connected to that at all, but it's a lot of like funny coincidences that have come up, I don't know, over the years, and that one is just still kind of surreal to me also.
Yeah. One last kind of episode, the question I've kind of got about the episode is that I'd love to know, what was it like to work with Daniel Von Bargen? You know, tragically kind of passed away a few years ago, like a total comedy legend. That was his first episode of Seinfeld as well. What was he like that time that you were on set together?
I didn't have a whole lot of interaction with him on set. I remember him kind of playing that Kruger part really well when we were even doing the still photos. Like, he was just kind of like real kind of not grumpy, but like cold, and like, we're here. And then he would like, you know, when we took the photo, you know, he was smiling. But I remember him having that kind of like Krugerness to him. And I saw a couple. I think I saw a couple of them shoot. I think I was there when they shot the scene with the photo on the desk, because I remember seeing them like put the props up for that. But I didn't really talk to him that much, unfortunately, because that day just like went by so fast. It was more of an interaction with Jason that day. Yeah. But
And I'm curious as well that, like, with Seinfeld, it's a show that kind of spawned over 200 episodes, filled with so many bizarre, wonderful, and memorable characters. What do you think about your kind of role within that? That, you know, you've got this photograph, and you've got this small scene with Jason Alexander, and like from that, you know, there's been several articles written about your role, you know, at, you know, Reddit MMAs, all these sorts of things. What do you think it was about your role in particular that's stood out in this whole kind of pantheon of Seinfeld characters?
That's interesting. I never really thought of it like that. I mean, there's so many little bits that have come up along the seasons. I mean, I wish I had a line. That would have been kind of cool to make it stand out even more. But I think what made it stand out, I mean, the fact that just the placement of me in the photo is right where they zoom in on George. And I remember watching it a couple times later and seeing how many times that they, like, zoomed in right on George's face. And, you know, I'm right below him in the photo. I don't know. I guess it just kind of, like, really sells that moment, because they really zoom in on his face to kind of sell that like, you know, grumpy look. I don't know, I guess you could say it's just like that kind of thing that's burned in everyone's mind over the years of watching the show, because a lot of the characters are more, you know, stand out more because of the verbal comedy value, but this is just more of like that subtle moment of like that comedy zoom right on this, like, grumpy man's face, and I'm just, like, here I am, like, smiling in the corner, like, as this guy is, like, suffering, you know, like, the eternal suffering of George. I don't know, I guess it's just burned into people's minds as this moment of, well, you know, laugh at the sad man or something.
And how did the kind of Huffington Post article kind of come about? That did they reach out to you? Is this something that you kind of wrote while reflecting back on it? It's a wonderful article.
Thank you. Yeah, my sibling at the time was, I think they were writing for Huffington Post or freelancing, and I think it was an anniversary. Might have been the anniversary of the episode, and they actually asked me. Because Oliver had worked in the entertainment, I think Entertainment News, and they wanted something written by me, because I'd been there to experience it. So I thought, okay, well then, I guess I'll just kind of go back through my you know, photos and kind of put something together and just kind of write the story, because I'd never really written it before. I just, you know, told people along the way who I'd met or. Just kind of, you know, casually in passing, but they wanted the kind of, like, first-hand account of how it went down, and I'm not sure if that was first or the Reddit AMA, but it was around the same time, and they wanted, like, a first-hand account of that, and the Reddit AMA was actually interesting because there's this cool kind of back-and-forth feedback with people, and you know, really... dedicated fans to the show, so that was kind of cool to kind of have like a back and forth conversation with those people, and then we actually go through my old pictures and post some of those of me, like, meeting with, like, Julia Louis-Dreyfus or with Jerry on set, or just kind of me sitting in, like, Monk's Cafe with my babysitter at the time, just flipping through the, you know, the fake menu.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then obviously kind of post-Seinfeld, we touched on it at the beginning that you're a photojournalist. Whenever I get someone, whether they're a photographer or they work on TV, film, I always love to know what kind of inspired them down that track, because to be someone that's creative, it's, you know, it's a risk, it's a gamble to go out there and do something like that. What kind of set you on your way? That obviously you touched upon some of those experiences on Seinfeld. What was it that turned it from perhaps like a passion into you know, a career? What kind of people inspired you and work, and what kind of brought you to this career?
You know, I think back to, like, how my first interest came about in photography. It wasn't like it wasn't a consistent thing, but I remember the first, one of the first cameras I used was a Game Boy camera. It was just, you know, it was, technically it was like this digital or black and white, monochrome, and you could print from it. But I had that for just a short period of time. But once I sat on that Panavision camera and I was really working with this like amazing machine, I just kind of, I just became more fascinated with how cameras worked and then the film. I remember like some years later, I was living in San Diego and I'd bought another camera, and it just became this constant thing where I just like been always taking pictures and just like becoming like more visual. But I always think back to using that Panavision camera on the Seinfeld set, because I always think of like, you know, I grew up loving movies, and movies are shot on film and they're shot on these amazing cameras. So like, to me, that was like the ultimate. That's like the pinnacle of it. So, you know, why not like move in that direction? You know, whether it's like filmmaking or you know, so, use a camera in some way. And that kind of came in so many different ways as far as photojournalism and photography. When I was in the Navy in San Diego, I was photographing on base there, and then I would just be kind of wandering about the city, just like taking pictures of random things in the street or people in the street, and it just became this kind of thing that I just kind of do every day, like a like an exercise, and just like slowly grew and grew, and then it expanded into photojournalism, just in the sense of me being curious of, well, what else can I be doing with this? And I remember going into a paper in LA, in Santa Clarita, The Signal, and just I just wanted to freelance for them, and I said, you know, let me shoot for you guys, and freelance for them for about a year. I just had this, I don't know, kind of growing, I don't know, obsession with just like taking pictures and shooting like anything I could. It didn't matter if it was like sports or like breaking news or just like my own personal projects. And it's just like something I'd, it's kind of become, you know, my passion, I guess you could say. But it's mainly just, I guess it's just a part of my life now. And whatever that incorporates to as far as my career as a photojournalist or just as, you know, kind of a personal record of my own life or my family or my friends, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so it's kind of taken you, you know, kind of around the world, your photography. What's some of the most amazing places that you've been? And what, when you think of, like, if someone was to say, what's a Travis Wesley style photograph and look, what would you sort of say that's kind of evolved into?
Let me think about that. Well, as far as interesting places, I've always been fascinated with Asia. And ever since I was a kid, I've wanted to go to Japan and just kind of experience this, what I imagine is like this futuristic world, or just something that's like so like far away from, you know, the, what the West Coast is. And a couple years ago, I went to Nepal, and it was the most eye-opening, amazing experience I've ever had. I felt like I was just in another world. And when I travel, it's not to photograph specifically, but it's more of a like secondary thing. Like I want to go there to experience it, and then the photography is more of just kind of capturing what comes along the way. I mean, there's like some exceptions, but there was a place where sometimes I would just stand there and I just like wouldn't even take a picture because there's so many like beautiful landscapes. And that's where I started to kind of appreciate landscapes more, I think, because I had kind of grown up in an urban environment in the city, and I like the kind of the rush and the commotion of like people and cars and all that. But I started to like really appreciate more of like these quieter, more natural scenes. And I've been wanting to go back ever since. I was there in 2015 when the earthquake happened, and that was a really intense experience. But I've still wanted to go back there since then. I've been it's been on my mind for a while.
You touched on like the earthquake there. Is it a challenge in moments like that to want to go take, you know, photos in an environment like that where there's so much kind of destruction, or is it sort of thinking, is this something that's maybe a step too far? You know, that kind of observer kind of effect. Is that a challenge that you find, or do you feel that the sort of the photographer side kicks in? It's like, this is something that needs to be documented and kind of showcased to people around the world, you know, the suffering that's going on.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. It is really difficult to kind of make that decision, especially. I mean, when I was there, I was just there on, for personal travel. I wasn't there working. So when the earthquake happened, I at first was thinking about, well, is it safe to go to wherever I want to go and photograph? But when the aftershock came, I think there was a major one the next day. That's when I started to think, like, well, now isn't the time you need to kind of like really think about what's more important, like documenting or like thinking about your own personal safety. It's this sort of thing, and especially at the time there was not a lot of cell coverage, and there wasn't a lot of internet working, so there's a lot of like unknowns excuse me at the time. So I was really in this kind of stalemate of, you know, I was about 200 miles west of Kathmandu. I was in Pokhara when it happened, and I wasn't sure if, you know, should maybe go back and then fly out soon, but didn't really know how bad the damage was. So it was a lot of unknowns. So making the decision to, like, should I go there and document what's going on, or should I, like, wait to see if it's, you know, safe enough? So it just became much more unstable, like, as that next week and a half went on with earthquake or with the aftershocks, I had to just decide that, like, you know, this is a time where people need to, like, the more important thing is for everyone to just be safe. If I had been there, like, working as a photojournalist, I mean, that's a different story, because then, you know, you are there to be an observer and to document that, you know, while that there'd still be a difficult thing to capture. That's a different story, but at the time, it was different.
And kind of finally, what kind of projects are you working on at the moment? Is there certain things that you've got kind of up your sleeve, or is there something you're kind of working on?
I've been actually trying to put together this thing about Asia for the last couple of years. I haven't put anything on my website yet. I want to put working on a book of just all my travels throughout Asia. And especially the Nepal trip, that was like one of the more kind of like defining experiences for me, and I think for my photography. So I'll be kind of putting something like that together. And then as far as just photojournalism work, I should be doing some freelance work for AP sometime this summer, actually baseball starting up end of the month, so might be shooting like some of the Giants, maybe some of the 49ers later this year. I think they're building a new Warrior Stadium, so I don't really shoot much basketball, but I might be getting more into that. But definitely Giants, 49ers, and then in between that, I think I'll be probably going back. I go to Asia at least once a year. I try to go. I just have this kind of hankering for some kind of different landscape photography, so I'll be doing that as well. That's a pretty good amount of what I'm working on right now, actually.
Sounds like quite a busy year you've got ahead, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think the other thing I think might be shooting is if the weather picks up, Mavericks over in I think down in Pacifica. I've been shooting a lot more surf lately, so maybe if the weather picks up and they get some big waves, might go shoot some more surf stuff down there, and maybe bust out the drone, get some drone footage. Awesome. Of some surfers.
If people wanted to, like, kind of reach out to you on the internet to kind of find out all this amazing photography that you do, and if they were looking for updates on your book and your Asian travels, where could kind of people find you online? Obviously, we'll put all these notes into these links into the show notes as well, so people can find them nice and easily.
Yeah, you can go to my website, which is traviswesley.com. I'll be updating my Asia trip on there sometime soon. And then you can also check out my Instagram, which is wayoutwesley. That's my personal work. And then my photojournalism stuff will be on Travis Wesley Photo. You can also check out my Tumblr page. I have some stuff on there. That's wayoutwesley.tumblr.com. And then any kind of updates on prints or any book stuff will be on my my own personal site. So yeah, check it out and let me know what you think.
Perfect, and we'll put them all again in the show notes if anyone's looking out for them. So thank you so much for coming on today, Travis. It's been a real pleasure to learn about your craft and your experiences that were just uncomparable to probably anyone else's. So thank you very much for giving up your Sunday to talk with me and our listeners. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much. It was great being on the show. Thank you so much.
No worries at all. And thank you very much. And thank you very much, listeners, for tuning in. Bye.
There. Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.